Hi, Drumstick. Oh, Drumstick, I think is going to be very happy.
I feel confident because I'm the best player in the world.
And we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen.
Did you do any PEDs?
No.
Did you do anything that they accuse you of?
No.
People are laughing at us all over the world. They think we're stupid, and we are. I mean, we're being led by stupid people.
That I needed to arm myself, that I needed to protect Reva and I, that I needed to get my gun.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Owen Paul James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
There's massive, massive sports betting going on.
We won with poorly educated. I love the poorly educated.
I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for Offside. Now, here's your host, TSN Informs legal analyst and Canada's favorite lawyer, Eric Macramella.
He's a lawyer.
And welcome once again to Offside. I want to thank everyone who tunes in each and every week, in particular our listeners on TSN Radio in Edmonton, in Montreal, and in Ottawa. I'm Steve Lloyd. That is Eric Macramella. We never have a shortage of topics to get into, so we'll dive right in. But I'll do the obligatory, and then he says, I don't care, but I'll say, how you doing? What's going on, Eric Macramella? How you doing?
My man. My question for you is this, is are you still wrestling trees inside of your home post-tornado? Because again, you have the worst luck of anyone that I know. Every time I see you on a weekly basis, I'm happy you're just alive. Is there still a large tree inside your home?
The tree is no longer inside the home. Well, that was my running joke, because you have to make jokes or you'll cry. To my daughter, I said, you've been asking dad for a treehouse your whole life. I said, ta-da, I brought the tree to your bedroom. Hey, how about that? Now you got
well
a treehouse.
Well so done, Steven.
She didn't think it was funny, but I laughed. I laughed at my own joke. Dad jokes, right?
As you wept. Yes, of course.
Yeah, tree's out. But now the thing is, it was a massive tree. And now I got to figure out a way how to get the massive logs out of the backyard with no backyard access because it's a walkout. So there we are. Okay. It's still a work in progress, Mr. Macron.
You know, Steve, I would say to you that I'm here for you, but I'm really not, because I'm not that strong and I have no solutions for you. So I'll do what people typically do and say, hey, I feel for you. And I wish you all the luck in the world with that treehouse.
That's right. Thoughts and prayers. All the best. Do a little shooter, you know. Okay. Have a good one. Thanks, bud. Really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's get into a topic that you and I have covered extensively for months and months and months on end. But we actually have some new developments. Deshaun Watson's hearing is underway here. Let me start with this. How would you term what exactly this is, this hearing that Deshaun Watson is now engaged in? And the NFL is going to determine how long he should be suspended. And the PA will go to bat for Deshaun Watson. This is just the beginning of this process. Explain this to us. What's happening right now?
So they are not in court. So this is a hearing as prescribed by the collective bargaining agreement. So they just assemble in a room, basically. And the hearings officer in this case is a retired federal court judge. Her name is Sue Robinson, and she's a real tiger, by the way, and she's not going to play favorites with either side. But she's going to hear the NFL's arguments and evidence, and the same with Deshaun Watson's arguments and evidence. Now, a couple points there. It's really interesting is that Deshaun Watson's lawyers, so the NFLPA and Deshaun Watson have retained Jeffrey Kessler to be their lawyer. Kessler is the seminal sports lawyer in North America and is responsible for a lot of the big cases going back to 1982, the McNeil case, which basically effectively legitimized free agency for NFL players. So he's been involved in a lot of the seminal cases, and he's on here for Deshaun Watson. The big issue at the outset for Sue Robinson is going to be whether she is going to allow Deshaun Watson, Kessler, and the NFLPA to advance a specific argument. The argument is that the owners in the NFL who have done bad things like Dan Snyder, Jerry Jones, and Robert Kraft, they haven't been treated as severely as the NFL wants to treat Deshaun Watson. And the reason that's important is because the personal conduct policy says owners will be held to a higher standard. And the reason that's important is because the NFL wants to suspend Deshaun Watson for at least 1 year, but they want it to be an indefinite suspension in case they come across anything new. So Deshaun Watson is saying, well, here, hang on a second. You barely punished Kraft. You barely, you actually didn't punish Jerry Jones. You barely punished Dan Snyder. Now you really want to punish me. You're holding me to a higher standard when the personal conduct policy, the policy that governs discipline here, provides that owners are held to a higher standard than players. The reason this is important is because if Sue Robinson says, yes, I will allow it, I will allow Deshaun Watson to argue that, it opens up a massive evidentiary can of worms, which could result in this hearing extending not for days, but potentially for weeks.
Now, that would be a massive tipping point. If that is allowed, Eric, you have maintained for weeks on end here that it was your belief this is what was going to happen. The NFL would be looking to suspend Deshaun Watson for at least the entire season here. But if he's allowed, and his lawyers allowed to argue that point you just made, is he suspended the whole season?
Well, that's the fascinating thing, right? Is that the NFL's position is a minimum of full season suspension is appropriate, as is an indefinite suspension, just given the extreme pattern of misconduct. You know, you mentioned for months now, I've been saying it's minimum a full season suspension, if not more. But going back a year, I was saying 6 to 8 to 10 games. But then we learned it wasn't just 24 women. He had gone to see another 20 massage therapists that his lawyer, that Deshaun Watson's lawyer, Rusty Hardin, had relied upon to show that, hey, he behaved himself with these 20 massage therapists. Then on top of that, he contacted in all 66 massage therapists over 17 months. Over
66
Instagram.
Different massage therapists different, over, different, 16
over 17 months,
months
via okay. Instagram. Right. So it's clear there's such a massive pattern here of misconduct. Just worst case, best case scenario is just terrible judgment on Deshaun Watson's part. Right. And so when I saw the numbers piling up, I'm like, Trevor Bauer got 2 years for what he did. And that was, you know, sexual assault on one woman, an awful, disgusting story, or allegations as to what he did. But man, Deshaun Watson, now you're looking at like, you know, you're nearing predator numbers here. So the NFL can't suspend him for 6 or 8 or 10 games. It has to be at the minimum 1 season. But here's the thing. If Sue Robinson decides at the hearing Deshaun Watson will not be suspended, then that's not reviewable with Roger Goodell. He then, because he hears typically hears appeals, he can't then change the punishment. But if Sue Robinson suspends Deshaun Watson for even a game, it is then appealed to Roger Goodell, who can then impose whatever discipline he wants on Deshaun Watson. So if Deshaun Watson is suspended for one game, then Roger Goodell will review the decision, suspend him for a season, make it an indefinite suspension. At which point, what will Deshaun Watson do? He will take the case to court. And I will say this. Courts are loath to see a punishment like that, an indefinite suspension, because it's not considered in keeping with precedent or past practice. In the U.S. is called law of shop. You've got to honor precedent within your industry. And on top of that, it seems a bit capricious and a bit arbitrary. And so judges don't look upon that fondly. But the bottom line is here, Sue Robinson has power, but it's limited. Once she suspends Deshaun Watson for anything, and she will, she has to, then the power resides with Roger Goodell to do what he wants to do now, and that is suspend him indefinitely, minimum 1 season.
This has been going on so long. There's many people listening to this conversation right now that are kind of in and out in this story. So this might be a bit of a covered ground recap. But Eric, is there any chance in your opinion that, like, we're talking about, you know, civil cases that have been settled, and there are a few that are still there. And we can get into now the Texans have been served as well. We can get into that conversation. Is there any chance, in your opinion, that this still could become criminal investigation at some point?
But it's, you can't take it off the table completely, but I would say it's highly unlikely. There were 10 women that filed criminal complaints. The district attorney elected not to pursue criminal charges against Deshaun Watson. A grand jury came back and said they would not issue charges against Deshaun Watson. That is, they would not issue what's referred to as an indictment. But when it comes to court proceedings, it's relevant because we know that there are now 24 civil lawsuits. In the most recent one, when I read it, Steve, Tony Busby, who's a lawyer for all of these claimants or plaintiffs, mentioned four or five potential other claims, sort of in passing in this, in his complaint. The complaint outlines the claim being made. So from my standpoint, there's a chance you might see four or five other civil lawsuits. So that's significant, right? And this is why the NFL kind of wants to hedge their bets and saying, want the suspension to be indefinite. Because what if you have 20 other women that come out? Now, to that, I would say this. He's clearly engaged in a pattern. He clearly loves massages. Clearly, he goes to these massage therapy sessions to get sexual favors. And if he doesn't get his way, then the allegation is he assaults these women in different ways. The narrative here isn't going to change. The status quo isn't really going to change. Yeah, you can add 5 or 10 or 15 more women. But, Steve, there are so many to begin with that the NFL, I think, can comfortably hear discipline Deshaun Watson and without the fear that things will change radically.
Well, anecdotally, you just brought it up again. I like to put things in other terms that we try, because I'm not a big massage guy, Eric. Okay, I've had a few in my life. It's just kind of not my thing. But I do know this: if I'm going to go pay for a service of any sort, I don't care if I'm going to a restaurant, I'm getting my hair cut, I'm doing things. How many months? Was it 16 months you said?
17 months. 66 going over 17 months over Instagram. That we know of.
Okay, so right
and
there.
Different women, as you said. You said you made such an important distinction. It's different women.
That's what I'm driving at here. Like, if I don't care what it is, if you like the nothing wrong with if you like a massage, right? But the red flag is, I think generally, if I go somewhere and I like the way a certain person cuts my hair, I keep going back to that person, right? I would think if you like to get a massage, if you would probably stay with people that you like to get a massage from and do a good job, and you're comfortable with that. The fact that you're going to 66 different, I keep, every time that comes up, I'm sorry, this is how my mind works, my old warp mind. I think of The Great Outdoors when Reg gets struck by lightning 66 times and 66 times, and we're all just appalled. 66 times. Yeah. It's 66 to Deshaun Watson. 66.
Yeah, I mean, it is a crazy
what is going on
sessions. But I mean, I think, Steve, we're past the point of examining whether there was, you know, that this was an exercise of poor judgment and whether there was unlawful activity. I think the assumption now is that some of these allegations have to be true. You know, when I was hosting on TSN 690 in Montreal, you know, the mid-afternoon show for a few hours at a time over a couple of weeks, one of the days I co-hosted with Andy Bennett, and she's back at the station, and she made a really good point, Steve. She said, women just want to be able to go to work and do their job. And that, to me, was such a, she just distilled it down perfectly, I thought. Because Deshaun Watson doesn't let these women go to work and do their job. He tries to get them to provide sexual favors. And so I thought that was a really good point that she made. The other thing I want to say is you raised it about the Texans now being served. Yes, the Texans have now, by Tony Busby, the lawyer for all the claimants, has joined or is now also suing the Texans. That was just a matter of time. Why is that? Because as per the New York Times report from about a month ago, the reporters had uncovered that the Texans provided Deshaun Watson with a non-disclosure agreement because he had been threatened by one of the massage therapists. So they were facilitating these appointments and these meetings. So from a legal standpoint, there are two things you look at. If I sue Deshaun Watson, I want to go after the people that have a lot of money. Now, Deshaun has a lot, $230 million guaranteed on his new deal. But of course, the Texans have more. You're looking at billions upon billions of dollars on the franchise valuation alone. So you want to try and sue the very wealthy people because they will be held in part liable. So that's what Tony Busby is doing. And also, you know, if they were complicit in this, and that's the argument, and that they facilitated this, then there's an argument that they should be held in part liable for what occurred. They knew, ought to have known, and encouraged or facilitated the wrongdoing.
Quick question on the Cleveland Browns and their role in all this as they observe the proceedings right now. And I think you've mentioned this before, Eric, that the only way Cleveland conceivably could get out from under the contract that they gave Deshaun Watson was so much guaranteed money, correct me if I'm wrong, if there were brand new allegations, new people coming forward since they signed him to that contract. Is that correct? Because I want to go down this road a little bit with you, but is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So in the agreement that he signed, there is a provision in the agreement that provides that basically if at the time he signed the contract, he had information of other potential claimants, like material information that might give the Browns pause and didn't share it at the time of signing the agreement, then that may form the basis for the Browns to void his deal. Now, that being said, in the first year of his deal, it's a 5-year deal, he's making $1 million. And then in the last 4 years, he's making $46 million. And so that's the agent, the Browns and Deshaun Watson seeking to sort of hedge their bets. They're saying, look, if he gets suspended with pay for 1 year, he's only at $1 million. So the contract was constructed by both the Browns and the agent to insulate Deshaun Watson as best as they could with respect to what he would owe if he was suspended or the money that he would be out. So that contract construction, Steve, tells us a lot about the Browns, Deshaun Watson, and his agent, and their expectation that Deshaun Watson would indeed be suspended for a year.
Yeah, they were game planning for this all along. That's kind of like lockout insurance we've seen in the NHL over the years, and potential lockout years. All of a sudden, salary goes down quite a bit and try to protect as much money as possible here.
You know, one thing I do want to address with Deshaun Watson is because, look, these are allegations, right? And so,
yes.
It, you know, this is a hearing and it is being managed by retired federal court judge Sue Robinson. And both sides are being held to a high evidentiary standard and a high standard with respect to the arguments being presented. And it's not as easy to say, hey, look, you know, he approached 66 women on Instagram over 17 months, guilty, guilty, guilty. Well, that's not how this is going to work. You've got to advance cogent, succinct, and thoughtful arguments and backed up with strong evidence. And Deshaun Watson, I think he'll argue two things here via Jeffrey Kessler. And it's interesting, it's Jeffrey Kessler, as I mentioned, and not Rusty Hardin that's managing this, because Rusty Hardin is out of his depth. Jeffrey Kessler is the guy that you go to if you're a player in any of the four leagues and you need to defend yourself and get the very best lawyer you can find. I think one defense Deshaun Watson may rely on is outlined in Article 46 of the CBA, and that is you can't be punished twice for the same thing. I call that the Ray Rice clause, right? Because the NFL tried to punish Ray Rice twice for knocking out Janae Palmer Rice and dragging her out of the elevator. After they saw the video of it and went public, they tried to punish him again, and that ultimately was overturned. Here, Deshaun Watson is going to say, look, I missed all of last season. That was a de facto suspension, and so that should be taken into account, Ms. Robinson, when you determine to what extent I should be disciplined.
Time now, served?
Totally. I think that's well said. And I think the counter argument of the NFL is, well, you were paid that entire time. Mm-hmm. But for athletes missing time, they can't get it back. Courts have said time and time again, when an athlete misses time, that's irreparable harm, harm that cannot be repaired. And so Article 46 is interesting. Of course, the other thing that he's going to, I think, rely on is, I didn't do it. And I really believe, Steven, I want to get your view on this. I believe Deshaun Watson thinks he's done nothing wrong. When he gives his press conferences, he keeps just saying that he's innocent, but I think he believes it. I don't think he gets what he did was wrong.
No, that's a good point. I think that we can't climb inside his head. Let's get that right away here. But it would appear, I would agree with you, I think that he's got a distorted sense of what he thinks is appropriate in those settings. And he doesn't think he did anything wrong. Like, we can go over and over again here. Everything is adding up that 66 different massage therapists, 24 civil suits. Who knows? There could be more pending here. Mm-hmm. You would think there is an obvious pattern here. And again, right, it's you know, he has not been criminally charged, you know, these are civil suits here, but you're right, every time he has an opportunity and he speaks about this, I don't think he's lying to us, I think is what you're driving at. Mm-hmm. He's not lying, he believes he's done nothing wrong, which is, well, that's another thing altogether that is kind of scary on a certain level, that he is doing these kind of things and he doesn't think there's anything wrong with it, which is a little disturbing.
It is. And that's why I think in this instance, discipline and substantial discipline is really important to impose on Deshaun Watson to not only send a message to other players and just the public generally that you don't do this kind of junk, but also to Deshaun Watson to educate him and say, look, you may not believe you did anything wrong, but she did. And he'll say, look, I was never criminally charged. Well, it's like I said on the show while they were investigating the criminal side of things, I didn't think he'd be charged. Why? Because every instance was he said versus she said. And this is a very difficult case and burden to make out because the event itself is intimate in nature to begin with, right? And so it becomes difficult to make out this case from a criminal standpoint. It's not like civil litigation where you have to make your case on a balance of probabilities, 51% versus 49% and you win. For criminal cases, you got to make your case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a far higher standard. So the fact that he wasn't charged criminally doesn't mean he didn't engage in criminal behavior. It just means that the DA didn't think there was enough there to convict him.
All right, we'll save Dan Snyder for our next segment. We're going to get into a bunch of other stuff here, but really quick, timing on this. You kind of went over this a little bit earlier in the conversation, how quickly a decision could be rendered, and you think it really depends upon if Deshaun Watson and his lawyer is allowed to argue what you talked about earlier, and that could delay things here. So best case scenario, Eric, how quickly could we get a decision? Worst case scenario, how long will we have to wait for a decision?
If Deshaun Watson is allowed to argue that the owners have been treated differently than him and to a lower standard, contrary to the personal conduct policy, which has to be held to a higher standard, then this hearing can stretch for a week or two or maybe even more, depending on how much evidence there is. If Sue Robinson, the hearing officer on this one, the retired federal court judge, says, no, that is not admissible, this can wrap up within a few days. And then a decision can issue, you know, a few days after that, depending on how long it takes Ms. Robinson to draft that decision, which will be appealed and may well find its way in a court of law.
All right. Well, speaking of owners supposedly being held to that higher standard, we'll talk about that coming up next here. Back in a moment on Offside.
Eric McRomala.
If he's allowed to go free, then something really wrong is going on.
Mr. Kirkland, you are out of order.
You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order. They're out of order.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order. I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr.
McRomala.
I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
Welcome back to Offside. So segment one was all about a player, Deshaun Watson, and conduct. Now we're going to talk about an owner. Stop me if you've heard this before. Dan Snyder is in the news for poor conduct. This is a recording. Tell us about what's happening right now, Eric, and tell us about this subpoena situation.
And I would say you've heard this before, too. Rich white guy will eventually get off. And that's what's going to happen here. Congress, one of the sort of the House committee.
You spoiled the ending.
Yeah, well, I haven't really, because eventually Dan Snyder will get his. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I think most of the civilized world can't wait for something bad to happen to Dan Snyder. He seems to represent the worst side of humanity. But the House committee asked Snyder to come speak. And he refused, and understandably so, because there is pending litigation swirling around him related to workplace harassment, sexual assault, sexual misconduct, skimming NFL revenue at the top and not sharing with the other teams. I mean, it's an absolute NFL dumpster fire for Dan Snyder, to the point where Goodell, the commissioner, was forced to testify. And trust me, he's not happy with Dan Snyder that he had to go testify. Here's the thing. The chairwoman leading the charge on this on the congressional side is Caroline Maloney. She's a Democrat. After the midterms in November, the Republicans are going to control the House. That means she's out and that this is over. Republicans have said that much. So if Dan Snyder can buy some time, he won't have to testify. Now, Maloney has issued a subpoena that is a direction that compels or forces him to come to the committee and testify. But he's out of the country. He's on his yacht somewhere in another hemisphere. And his lawyers indicated she's not authorized to accept service on his behalf. That means, say, yes, I'm accepting it on his behalf, which means Dan Snyder is getting it and he'll be there. So far he's refused the subpoena. If you refuse a subpoena, technically you can be held in contempt and maybe go to jail. But Congress has not been consistent with that. So that seems unlikely here. And the Republicans are saying, why are you going after Dan Snyder here, right? But the Congress, their mandate in part is that because he's done all these bad things, it's kind of seeped out into the society generally and has adversely impacted the well-being of people beyond him, his employees and family members, those kinds of things. And for that reason, Congress has stepped in.
So basically what you're saying, the strategy, it would appear, for Dan Snyder is, if we're going to talk boxing, just keep hugging. You know, don't fight. Keep maybe leaning back on the ropes. Just don't engage. Let's just try to drag this out for the full 12 rounds here. And we're going to run out the clock. That's basically the strategy at play here.
It is for this congressional hearing. Yes. And I think he's going to be successful. And his lawyer has a viable legal argument when they say that he doesn't actually want to testify. Now they're saying he will. He's just out of the country. So he doesn't have the subpoena in hand. But their legal argument is you have all this potential civil litigation swirling around him that doesn't want to impeach himself. Now, he could take the fifth and not answer the questions, but then what's the point in going, right? And when you do that, you kind of look a little bit guilty, at least in the eyes of the public, although that's not the legal standard. But there's a good argument on the part of Dan Snyder that he need not do this. But here's the thing. Okay, congressional hearing aside, Steve, we're dealing with an awful human being, one of the worst owners in the history of sports. He's stolen from other owners. The NFL is a celebrated centralized revenue model. 40% of revenue is shared with all the teams. He's been skimming off the top and keeping that money for himself. Sexual assault allegations, sexual misconduct. I mean, it's a rancid, rancid culture. Steve, even if Congress steps away from Dan Snyder and lets him be, what's his fate as an owner in the NFL?
Here's my question back to you. And we address this and the difference between Snyder and Jerry Richardson when he ended up selling the Panthers, right? Now he willingly did that. He decided to sell, but you know, it was getting pretty hot in the kitchen at that point here. Snyder, it's like, this would have happened years ago with other situations. He's determined. He didn't want to change the nickname of the team for years. He digs in here. My question to you, all this other stuff that he is and what he's done and all this bad stuff, I hate to say it, some NFL owners you'd be looking at it. It's like, well, you know what? If we turn the screws on Dan Snyder, what if something goes wrong with me and then it's going to happen to me? But here's the thing. You just laid it out. He has stolen money from these other owners. I mean, that's usually, I hate to say it, the worst thing you can do to a fellow owner. And Dan Snyder has done worse things allegedly to other people, other than just taking money. How have more owners in the NFL, Eric, not turned on him if he has stolen from them and skimmed in what's supposed to be, you know, the NFL is the model for revenue sharing, right? Wellington Mara, all of that. The reason why we have the NFL the way it is today, this guy's taking from other owners and they still won't turn on him. What's going on?
#glasshouse. You have to be careful if you're an owner. Yeah. And it goes back to what you said about owners setting a precedent if they vote Dan Snyder out. So the way it works is if you want to vote an owner out, and it's a massive legal deal if you do that, 75% of owners have to vote him out. So when you do that, you are creating a precedent that could potentially backfire on you if you are found to have engaged in any type of misconduct, sexual misconduct, workplace misconduct, whatever the allegations are. So by voting Dan Snyder out, you as an owner voting him out, make yourself more vulnerable to also being voted out. So like Don Sterling, and this is a nuanced distinction, Don Sterling wasn't forced to sell the team. Adam Silver, the commissioner, banned him for life. That's on the intro to this show. So they banned Don Sterling for life, but didn't force him to sell the team. His wife, I think her name was Shelley Sterling. It's been about 10 years. She took over ownership of the team. So there wasn't the need to address the forced disposition of the franchise. So Dan Snyder could be banned by Roger Goodell, but he needs effectively the support of all the owners to force Dan Snyder to sell the team. We also know that he's given up the day-to-day operation of the Washington franchise, or the Commanders, whatever the hell they're called now, to his wife. I think the NFL would love to get rid of Dan Snyder. He's a thorn in their side. He's terrible for business, terrible for optics, and is just not good for the brand and the Shield generally. But if they ever tried to ban him for life or force the sale of his team, he would sue them in a minute. Richardson, you mentioned, the owner of the Panthers, there were allegations of sexual misconduct. That was done very quietly, and he stepped aside. We don't know all the facts, if there was more behind the scenes, but you barely heard anything. It was a done deal from the very beginning. Dan Snyder will fight you tooth and nail until the end of time. And so I'm involved in a lot of legal cases where the merits of success are the same, but the strategy we take differs upon who we're going after and the type of response we expect back.
All right. Let's put a pin in the unsavory storylines with Deshaun Watson and Dan Snyder. And we'll come back to one in a little bit here. But the Stanley Cup playoffs are in the books. Year one of ESPN and TNT in the books. Eric, ratings. You and I discussed this a little bit on your hit on TSN 1200.
You're a smash hit show.
Yeah, and you've been doing a little more digging on this, because I think anecdotally it's been wonderful for the NHL to be back on ESPN, and I think splitting it up and having TNT, and they've tried to create, you're not going to totally create what they do with the NBA on TNT with their panel, but you know that you can tell that's kind of the model they're driving at here. I think it was a pretty solid year one with this new American television deal. What did the ratings tell us?
Well, first, I agree with what you're saying. I thought that, you know, Disney and TNT did a really nice job in their first year. They hit the ground running. I found myself watching the U.S. broadcast in favor of the Canadian broadcast, to be honest. And I love listening to Messier and Chelios and Gretzky and all those guys. And I thought they did a really, really good job. There has been a lot of enthusiasm about these ratings, right? The Stanley Cup final averaged 4.59 million viewers on ABC. Everyone is celebrating. That's the best since 2020. Well, it is, but 2020 and 2021 were really weird years. But those numbers are still the worst numbers since the Penn Sharks final in 2016. To provide more context, the ratings for the Cup final is ranked 10th out of the last 20 Cup finals. Over the past 20 years, it ranks 10th. And the overall Stanley Cup playoffs on U.S. TV averaged 1.36 million viewers, which is better than 2021, but is lower than what the NHL has seen in 5 years. Now, the final, the Game 6 clincher, the ratings were nearly 6 million, which is fantastic. Those ratings were really good. Plus, it doesn't account for what they call OOH ratings, like out of home, going to bars, a friend's place, those things. I think ultimately, though, that the takeaway is while the numbers for the NHL playoffs are a bit soft, for the games that matter, they're strong. And ultimately, Steve, there's an upward trend here that is, I think, leaving the NHL optimistic. That's what happens when you partner with ESPN, which is in every hotel room and every restaurant. That's you need to be with ESPN. That takes your league to a whole new level.
Well, just flat out, I'm on ESPN's website a lot every day, right? Preparing for sports shows and doing research and what have you. For the last number of years, you would never, unless something bad happened, like somebody, Tom Wilson has done something, you know what I mean? Like there is something very violent, something bad has happened. You would never, ever see, ever be a lead story on the front page, middle of the page, on the front page of ESPN.com. You would never even see it in the lineup on the right at all. Now, it's back on ESPN. They promote it here. It's a little easier to see hockey stories, NHL stories, just on the website alone. SportsCenter, I know, you know, and being in the States. And if you're trying to get some hockey highlights back, good luck, right? You'd be lucky if you got a score on the crawl. And they created a daily show and they would incorporate it. You would actually see it all season long in SportsCenter. And it is just much more accessible than NBC Sports was. It's ESPN. It's the OG. Just to be back on that kind of platform. I know the ratings, they should get better. You would hope they would get better. because you make a good point. Sure, it's fine to say it's better from 2 years ago, but like, what have we been in the last 2 years? I should hope so.
Everything is better than two years ago.
I mean, like, you're bragging about being the valedictorian of summer school if you're comparing it to that. So, but I like the product. It was a smart move by the NHL. I think it was a good year one with their new partners, especially ESPN. And I think the NHL should be encouraged where this is going.
You know, accessibility provides you an opportunity for growth. And ESPN is making NHL hockey widely accessible, as is TNT. And they're also, the production value is very strong. The intermission shows are really good and they're entertaining. And this is just year one. So I can understand why the NHL today is feeling optimistic about where things are headed. You know, there was a day with the NBA where their finals were on tape delay. And look where they are today. And you know what? The NHL game on TV is so much fun to watch, you know? And I know it's part of our blood, it's part of our core, and part of our DNA. I get it as Canadians, but I mean, watching hockey, there's nothing like it. And so you'd hope that by virtue of this access, ease of access, the NHL is going to capitalize with respect to growth potential long-term and see these ratings grow from year to year. And I think, Steve, I think it is going to happen.
I think we got just enough time here to get your update of where we stand with what's going on with Hockey Canada. The very latest is a major sponsor has spoken up, and that's Scotiabank. And they're pulling some direct money from the World Juniors, and they're reallocating that money. We'll see if some other major sponsors end up following suit with this. There are two more hearings scheduled for the end of July, where there will be more information has been asked for by the subcommittee. They want to hear from Heenan Hutchinson and the incomplete report. So, Eric, start with the money. Follow the money, as we like to say to each other for years. This is significant that Scotiabank has spoken up here. That's a major sponsor.
It's significant. I mean, look, Hockey Canada is there's some value to the organization. I mean, they're worth upwards of $153 million. And over the past 2 years, they've received about $14 million in grants. But Scotiabank saying that we're going to step back from Hockey Canada is substantial, not just from a monetary or fiscal standpoint, but also from a reputational standpoint for Hockey Canada. Scotiabank is known as supporting hockey across Canada. That's what they do. And for them to say, no, we're no longer going to associate ourselves with this tarnished brand that is Hockey Canada, that's a massive deal. And so there's a strong incentive for Hockey Canada to not kind of, you know, make some internal changes. Yeah, Tom Rennie will be gone anyway at the end of the year when it comes to leadership. It's a substantial overhaul of their culture. The one thing that really stood out, Steve, to me was during Rennie's testimony, he said, well, we get these types of issues once, twice, or three times a year. And despite that, he conceded that Hockey Canada doesn't have some kind of robust model in place to deal this kind of stuff. Also to, you know, provide education to players, although I don't know why you have to educate some players not to gang rape a woman. But, you know, every business has these platforms in place, these frameworks in place to educate, inform, teach, and also handle these types of complaints. And Hockey Canada doesn't have that. So the takeaway for me, Steve, I'm curious how you reacted to it, was the bottom line is, yeah, maybe they cared, but they barely cared or didn't care enough.
Well, and you and I discussed this already on TSN 1200. This is significant that these hearings are happening in the middle of the summer. I mean, Parliament's going to be out of session. They said, no, this is important. We're doing this. We got to get this done now. So that sends a strong message. And I really think a big reason why they did not like the answer from Scott Smith and Tom Rennie about, well, how many other cases are we talking about a year? And it was like, the answer was like 2 to 3 over the last six years. And so that really got everybody's attention, and Pascal St-Ange, and we need more information, right? We need more transparency. That's why this is going to happen now in the middle of the summer. All right, we're up against it, but we'll have a lot more on this story in the coming weeks here on Offside. Back in a moment with Eric's Donald Trump Loser of the Week on Offside.
The
They're losers. They're just losers.
Suffers from a thing called loser's remorse. She lost.
Well, Rosie's a loser. She's always been a loser. We have losers. We have losers.
And Cher is somewhat of a loser. She's lonely. She's unhappy.
Look, Glenn's a loser, okay? Just so you understand. This guy's a serious loser.
All right, welcome back to it. You hear the music, and we are almost at a show. It is time for Eric Makromelis, Donald Trump, Loser of the Week.
Thank you, Stephen. My DT lowdown of the week is, well, he's a repeat winner. It's Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets. Now the Brooklyn Nets are still the Brooklyn Nets. He opted in to collect $37 million, and when he did, he said something that was predictable but irritates me, you know, and quote, normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow, end quote. He has tried to describe himself in many ways as a messiah, as the chosen one, as Anakin before he went dark. If you're a messiah, if you are someone who is an agent of change, you don't tell people you're an agent of change. You just do things and things change. Just because you say you're an agent of change doesn't say you are. And he's not. He thinks the earth is flat. He went to parties at the height of COVID. He's a bad teammate, right? And the only reason he's still in the Nets is because the opt-in is $37 million, and to go to the Lakers, he would have had to take in a pay cut down to $6 million. So that's why he decided to stay in. And it was really telling. The Brooklyn Nets last week just publicly said, hey, you know what? We're just looking for someone to come in and be a good teammate. That was an absolute shot at Kyrie Irving, who missed most of the season because he wouldn't get vaccinated. Kyrie is about Kyrie. He's not the messiah. He's a borderline, if not even borderline, he is a narcissist. It begins and ends with Kyrie when it comes to Kyrie Irving. He's a terrible teammate. Yeah, he's an amazing ball handler, a terrific basketball player. But in life, that's not enough. You have to be a great teammate. And he's not. He's selfish. So for that reason, Kyrie Irving is my Donald Trump loser of the week.
Nobody's stronger than me.
Nobody has better toys than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
There's nobody that's done so much for equality as I have.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
The sale of the uranium, that nobody knows what it means. I know what it means.
Nobody knows more about trade than me.
Nobody knows the system better than me, which is why I alone can fix it.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Offside. We are right out of time. Always a pleasure. Eric, please join us again next week for the next edition of Offside.
Although I love Tom Brady, I got to tell you, I do love Tom Brady.